Call the joint ways means meeting to order. Monday, July 2nd. I guess we're going to start giving the times. We're meeting so frequently now. 5:30. Bills, Jackie, reported out of subcommittee. Senate Bill 5527. Ruck to Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5527, the budget for the Department of Human Services totals $8.5 billion. This is a 11.6% increase over the 9901 estimated expenditure included in the agency's May 2001 rebalanced approved during the session in House Bill 5046. The general fund, which totals $2.5 billion, supports 29% of the department's expenditures and increases 12.1%. The Adult and Family Services budget restores a $5 a month reduction to the cash assistance grant, continues a policy of reduced daycare copayments, and partially restores funding for the Jobs and Jobs Plus programs. It includes additional funding for the post-secondary student daycare program. To provide some of the funding for these restorations, the budget also reflects staff reduction and a $4 million reduction to the emergency assistance program. The Senior and Disabled Services budget restores Oregon Project Independence, Medicaid long-term care services to clients in impairment levels 15 through 17, and adds funding for nursing home rebasing and community-based restructuring. The Voc Rehab Program budget includes funds to restore the agency's shelter services, vocational program for severely disabled persons. The budget for the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Program continues the program expansion included in the 9901 budget. The budget maintains the $100 per day residential treatment rate and restores 37 treatment beds. The Public Health Program budget restores funding for school-based health clinics and uses $5 million of the Master Tobacco Settlement Funds for tobacco education and prevention. The Director's Office budget includes $4.1 million general fund and $16.7 million federal funds for the Medicaid Management Information System and Mental Health Payment System replacement. The budget also includes reduction of nearly $4 million assessed to department programs and offices for savings related to the department reorganization. The budget for the Office of Medical Assistance Program maintains current benefit levels by implementing cost containment measures designed to reduce costs through client cost sharing, case management, and rate restructuring. A $6.7 million special appropriation to the Emergency Board is included for caseload and prescription drug issues. And another $2.2 million goes to the Emergency Board for distribution to Safety Next clinics. This is in addition to the $37.7 million added to the budget for federally qualified health centers and rural health clinics. Capitated rates for managed care providers are increased 18%, in addition to the 2% increase provided by the Emergency Board in November 2000. The general fund increase for OMAP is held to 14.9% because $124 million in general fund costs are shifted to tobacco settlement funds. The budget for services to children and families reflects continued growth in program caseload and costs. The budget implements individualized system of care services statewide by the end of the biennium. Although flex funding funds are reduced overall, and the final nine counties will not begin phase-in until April 2002. The budget for mental health services continues funding community mental health services under the Oregon Health Plan. It reflects higher costs at Oregon State Hospital for a growing number of criminal commitments, federal seclusion and restraint rules, and improved infection tracking and control. The budget adds less restrictive community-based services for both adults and children with mental illness. Developmental disability services will provide services to an additional 2,250 persons in the 2001-03 biennium, in accord with the Staley versus Kisshopper settlement agreement. Funding for the second year cost of that plan, $19.2 million, is appropriated to the Emergency Board. The agency will also review its costs and potential alternatives for state-operated group homes and report to the Emergency Board on any savings that may be achieved. The subcommittee cut the cost to mothball the Fairview Training Center by $2.4 million based on a plan for minimal maintenance until the property is sold. The Human Services Subcommittee on Ways and Means worked hard on this budget and made many difficult choices. The budget does not restore all the reductions made in the governor's budget, but fortunately, it does restore many of them. And while the budget does not provide funding for all that the subcommittee, or for that matter, the assembly, wanted to do, it does allow the department to sustain many of the current programs and services for Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. I urge your support for Senate Bill 5527.
Subcommittee not only worked hard, they did an excellent job. Thank you, Representative Winters. Any discussion? Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I want to express appreciation to the Chair's leadership and committee's hard work in establishing this budget. It's not an easy budget. We restore many of the programs that were cut, and I believe this is a very good budget under the circumstances. I do want to express one of my concerns that an important issue is not addressed. The providers for the mentally disabled citizens, the providers were promised a wage increase when the Fairview was closed, and in the long-range plan, they were promised a dollar increase per hour over three bienniums, and this is the third biennium that a 25-cent wage increase is promised, and we are not able to do that. We are facing 75% turnover rate and a wage that is about 70% less than state-operated group homes. In state-operated group homes, the staff ratio is like 4.5 staff to one person, and it costs the state $250,000 decline per year. In the community-based homes, it costs about $90,000 per client per year. I'm very concerned that the high turnover rate means low quality care for the disabled citizens. I am going to continue to work hard to bring more efficiency to the state-run group homes, and perhaps the savings will be able to be used to address this issue. There's a budget note in the budget that asks for an independent review to look at state-run group homes. Hopefully, we'll provide recommendation to bring more efficiency to the state-run group homes, and I'm hopeful that the savings will be used to address this very unfair situation, bring up the quality of care for the mentally disabled citizens.
Thank you, Senator. I think the issue you raise is an important issue and correct in being able to keep and retain qualified group home providers. But it's my understanding, as this specific issue you raise with regard to the 25 cent raises, is that there was one 80 cent raise fairly quickly right after the Fairview the patients were pulled out of Fairview, and then three 25 cent raises. I believe that's correct. I see Peggy shaking her head. No.
I didn't.
Mr. Chairman, the original plan called for three raises, a 25 cent raise. Well, Sheila's the person to answer this. Two 25 cent raises and a 50 cent raise. What happened is that the third raise, which was supposed to be 50 cents, that was supposed to take place in April of 1998, instead took place early in January of 1998 and was an 80 cent rather than a 50 cent raise. So there were 25 cents, 25 cents, and 80 cents. And the 80 cents took place of the 50 cents and came about 3 or 4 months earlier.
Well, I knew there were a couple of quarters and 80 cents involved in that. But I think the point is that the Good Senator has raised this issue to me, and so I looked into it. The state has met its obligation. Now, that doesn't mean that we pay competitive rates as in a job market that has been rising, you know, as rapidly. I agree with your basic issue.
Mr. Chair, I want to mention that in the mental health department's own budget recommendation, they said the fourth 25 cents increase needs to occur July 2002, and I brought with me a copy of their budget recommendation for 0103, although governor did not approve the fourth 25 cents increase. So it hasn't occurred yet, according to the department's own recommendation, but I will work very hard to help bring efficiency to the state-run group home, and hopefully savings will be used to address this issue.
And again, so I think your point is well taken, trying to keep providers in the home.
Yes.
Senator Tro.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, I certainly share your commendation of the committee. I was on the education subcommittee, and a number of the members on that sub are also on the human resources sub, and I know how hard they worked and what a difficult budget this is. I wish there had been more general fund to apply to this budget. I think it would make sense to use more of the tobacco settlement dollars in this budget so that we can do an even better job than the committee has done, but that didn't happen. One of the things that I haven't had a chance, most of us haven't had a chance to look at this very extensive budget document. I mean, it's big and detailed and well done. But I looked at the first part dealing with adult and family services, and especially since I'm on the task force for hunger relief, have been concerned about extending the ability of hungry Oregonians to qualify for food stamps. And it looked to me like there were rather substantial reductions in staff in that activity. I haven't had a chance to study it, so I don't know, but I'm not sure that that's a cost-effective reduction if that's the case. Senator Yee has invited the staff from LFO to come to our caucus tomorrow to talk to us about the budget, so I think it'll be good to have that review of the budget. I do commend the committee for doing a good job. I'll give a courtesy yes at this point, but may reserve the right to vote no on the floor.
Thank you, Senator. Yes. Senator Duncan.
Mr. Chair, having been a member of the committee, I've had a chance for many months to see these budgets, and I will be carrying it on the floor in the Senate, on the Senate side, so I might just make some comments now because I don't want to be talking about that on the floor. I share some of the concerns that have been addressed here. It's a tough one. I know we can't satisfy everyone, and I'm certainly not satisfied. Of course, we keep hoping that there's still a few days left and a couple of things might happen. I look at a couple of my concerns. So I'll be supporting it, and we'll be supporting it on the floor as I carry it. But I think that there are many people out there wondering why we didn't do this and why we didn't do that. But I also think that the committee just did a great job, and our chair was absolutely fantastic, Mr. Chair. Knowledgeable as all get out. And you hate to do this, but I'm going to acknowledge Representative Schraders. I mean, you hate to deal with just one person, because there are some great members of that committee. But I tell you, when you put Chair Winters and we look upon him almost as Vice Chair Schrader together, it was a fantastic team, and they did great work, even though none of us are all satisfied.
Thank you. You start going down the list, Representative Bates.
Well, that's why I say you hate to mention one, because I did. I think Senator Duncan actually should be commended, too, for his work. I meant Hartung. I get them mixed up all the time.
Seeing no second, I...
Co-Chair Wesson, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all the members of my committee because they've done an outstanding job, and I want to specifically thank a very thank you to the LFO staff. Without them, there is no way we could have gotten this budget done with their knowledge and their hard work of putting all this together. This is a tremendous undertaking, and I don't know if everyone in this building understands the depth and the breadth of doing a budget of this magnitude. And it come with a lot of hard soul searching to reach the decisions that we did finally come to. And I just want to thank my committee members. They've worked hard and long, and I want to thank LFO staff because we couldn't have done it without you.
Any other discussion? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I also want to express gratitude to Representative Winters, and I know that there's a great deal of work that's gone into this, and she has been able to step up and answer each question I've had. I understand that the Medicaid prescription drugs portion is still somewhat in play at this particular point. I needed to ask, is the portion of the money that's being set aside in the general fund potentially to address some of those issues relative to that copay? Thank you.
That's, yes.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I need to declare a potential conflict of interest as I work for a pharmacy company.
Any other discussions? Representative Hayden.
Healthcare provider potential conflict.
Understand. We ought to have just a little button there. Any other questions? Further discussion? Co-Chair Hannon.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I'd like to thank Representative Winters, the entire committee, the staff of LFO for the work. We sometimes get busy and don't take the time to thank you for the appreciation that you showed us, but we do appreciate what you have done for us this session. And I want to thank you for your work. I want to say this, that no one can walk away and say we did all things for all people, but we did the best that we had with the limited resources that we had to work with. And it's difficult. And for some of my colleagues who are experiencing this for the first time, it's not a pleasant experience, I can assure you. But the only thing you can do is to do your utmost and do your best. The committee has done that. Are there improvements? Yes. Do we need more money? Yes. But that will probably occur another day, another time. But I want to thank all the members for their work and their effort, because we all share the responsibility together. And it's difficult to have to sit and cast a vote in support of something that you personally know doesn't go far enough. But there's been several budgets so far this session that have met that criteria. They don't go far enough. And we do our best. So I thank you all for your work.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Duncan.
Mr. Chair, since we went beyond the one person, I think we did forget one group. And I think we really need to thank Bobby Mink and all of his staff, because this is a tough, tough budget. And they were really extremely cooperative. And I think we ought to thank the DHS staff for their work, too.
Yeah, you know, a lot of us, as we go through the session, we get so deep into the budget forest, we can't see the trees a little bit, and we tend to forget that we entered this session with a $700 million current service level shortfall. Part of that shortfall is reflected in this budget, and it made these tough decisions all the tougher. Any other comments? Questions? Any objections to moving Senate Bill 5527 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation? Let the record show Senator Dukes is an objector.
I'm a courtesy vote.
Seeing no other objections, Senate Bill 5527 is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. So ordered. Other bills reported out of subcommittee.
Senate Bill 62. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 62 expands fiscal controls on funds dedicated to specific fish and wildlife uses. An audit of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee last year identified many irregularities in how the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife used dedicated funds and recommended Senate Bill 62 to clarify how dedicated funds in the Fish Endowment account could be used by the department. Your Subcommittee on Natural Resources adopted amendments to expand those fiscal controls to all of the department's dedicated fund accounts. Briefly, Senate Bill 62 sets up a fish and wildlife account separate from the state wildlife funds. All of the subaccounts dedicated to special uses in the fish and wildlife programs are transferred to the fish and wildlife account. Senate Bill 62 authorizes the interest in those accounts to be credited to the state wildlife fund as in the past, but prohibits the use of those funds for any purpose except that described in statute. Senate Bill 62 deletes the Fish Endowment account and transfers funds within it to a new subaccount named the Fish and Wildlife Deferred Maintenance Subaccount. The interest earnings on the Fish and Wildlife Deferred Maintenance Subaccount are dedicated to maintenance of fish hatcheries and other facilities, excluding the agency's headquarters. Senate Bill 62 allows the department to borrow from this subaccount to ease cash flow fluctuations. Loans on principal funds must be repaid within 6 months. Loans on interest earnings must be repaid by the end of the biennium in which borrowed. The department must pay interest on the funds it borrows. Senate Bill 62 also directs one-half of all investment and interest earned on money in the State Wildlife Fund to the Fish and Wildlife Deferred Maintenance Account through the end of the 03-05 biennium to build up principal in the account. Finally, the bill requires the Fish and Wildlife Department to report how the funds in the dedicated accounts are used as part of the budget process. Your Subcommittee on Natural Resources recommends passage of Senate Bill 62 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objections to moving Senate Bill 62 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 229. Representative Hill.
Senate Bill 229 creates a designation for electronic commerce that provides qualified firms with a three-year property tax exemption for qualified property and income tax credit for 25% of qualified investments up to $2 million. It allows the City of North Plains and the sponsors of all existing enterprise zones to request to be designated for electronic commerce. It also allows the Economic Community Development Department to approve four zones for electronic commerce designation while striving for regional balance. The bill establishes an income tax credit for 20% of the cost of installing advanced telecommunication facilities between January 1, 2002 and December 31, 2005. It requires the Economic and Community Development Department to certify costs and limits annual certification to $10 million. The bill also has minimal fiscal impact, reduces general fund revenue by $1.6 million for 2001-03 biennium, reduces local property tax revenues by $200,000 for the 2001-03 biennium. Your subcommittee recommends approval of Senate Bill 229 as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objections to moving Senate Bill 229 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation?
Let the record show Senator Miller's a nay.
Is that a no, Senator Brown?
No, I was just moving my microphone.
The mic adjust. Seeing no other nays, Senate Bill 229 is moved to the House floor with a two-pass recommendation. Senate Bill 790. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 790 establishes the Oregon Council on Healthcare Interpreters within the Department of Human Services to improve access to healthcare for persons with limited English proficiency. The bill also directs the Department of Human Services to establish certification program for healthcare interpreters for persons with limited English proficiency. During the interim, the Racial and Ethnic Health Task Force considered barriers to healthcare for minorities in Oregon. The task force identified the difficulty of persons with limited English proficiency have in accessing needed healthcare without qualified interpretation into their own language. Senate Bill 790 begins the process to establish standards for testing and qualifications for certifications of these interpreters. The certification program is expected to be eventually supported, but seed money is needed to establish the program. Your Subcommittee on Capital Construction made amendments to the bill at the request of the Substantive Committee and added a one-time $50,000 general fund appropriation. Your Subcommittee also authorized one limited duration position in the Director's Office of the Department of Human Services equal to 0.25 FTE. Your Subcommittee recommends passage of Senate Bill 790 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thanks, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The carrier indicated in the comments that it would eventually be fee supported. Fees from where?
I assume, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Johnson, from the interpreters themselves. Yes.
We'll get an affirmative nod from staff on that.
Yes.
Yes.
Any further questions? Further discussion? Any objections to moving Bill 790 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation? Let the record show Representative Johnson is a nay. Seeing no other objections, Senate Bill 790 as amended is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. So ordered. House Bill 2166, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 2166 repeals the sunset on hunting and fishing license and tag fees. The last Legislative Assembly authorized a restructuring of angling license tags and a fee increase on several other hunting and fishing licenses and tags. That bill imposed a 2001 sunset on the fees. The change in license and tag fees has been well received by the public. The budget just approved by your subcommittee for the Department of Fish and Wildlife assumes that the revenue from continuing the fee increase will continue. Your Subcommittee on Natural Resources recommends passing House Bill 2166 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative.
And if I might add, Mr. Co-Chair, this is the final piece in the what we call the OPSW recovery plan, and so this is an important moment.
Nice editing. Any questions on this important last piece of ODFW restructuring? Any objections?
I'm a no.
Or any discussion? Further discussion, I guess. Okay. Any objections to moving House Bill 2166? The record shows Senator Yee. Any other objections? Seeing none. House Bill 2166 is moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. So ordered. House Bill 2265, Senator Clarno.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This bill establishes the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service in the Housing and Community Services Department. The bill was first referred to the Senate Health and Human Services Committee with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. The Health and Human Services Committee passed the bill out without amendments. This bill was anticipated in the governor's recommended budget. The necessary FTE and expenditure limitation have been approved in the department's budget. Your subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? Any discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I would just make the observation that as laudable as I think it is to establish commissions to advocate on behalf of volunteerism and community service, there are some private sector providers, notably Solve, that does this admirably. In fact, I think Solve has the largest volunteer base of any not-for-profit, certainly in the state of Oregon, perhaps in the nation. And I question whether or not an additional commission to advocate for volunteerism and public service at the government level is necessary when it's being addressed rather well through the private sector in a variety of arenas.
Representative, any further questions? Any further discussion? Senator Duke.
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair, I obviously missed something. This has got to be a really stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How does a Commission for Voluntary Action and Service get a $5 million budget?
That's $50 million. Oh, we shorted them. I'm quite certain they don't have a $5 million budget. Hold on. I'm looking.
5.2.
Federal funds.
It's a marathon.
Yeah, not this staff.
Special payments.
Mr.
Chair, members of the committee.
I got a little commission I'd like to talk about.
Those are federal funds that I think that will be used through this, be passed through this group to pay for volunteers. That's my understanding.
To pay for volunteers?
That could be a problem.
But it is, most, all of it is federal funds and not for the FP, for special.
Well, I didn't know what it was for. I just seemed, it thought, it seemed like an awful lot of money for a commission.
Maybe we get a further explanation from Director Refine.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Oh, there he is.
For the record, Bob Refine, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. The money that you're talking about, Senator, is the AmeriCorps money that comes through the state of Oregon. And this commission currently administers that those AmeriCorps dollars are then taken in and then distributed to communities as AmeriCorps workers locate around the land basis. So those are federal dollars administered through this commission for the effect of paying for the staffing operations of AmeriCorps employees.
But I assume the commission is going to do more than just AmeriCorps?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Dukes, the commission's mission has actually been volunteer activities for the state. When they were created back in the, I think, 89 or 91 session, they inherited, got the AmeriCorps piece, and that kind of is where they've been doing a lot of their work and activity, but they, because they've been wanting to do more in the volunteer side of their mission, they took the AmeriCorps piece because that helps meet some of that mission obligations because they can place volunteers in communities that are looking for capacity to create opportunities in those communities. But indeed, with the AmeriCorps program that they currently administer, plus the getting a better base of volunteer opportunities, their goal is to be more widely involved in volunteer issues around the state of Oregon.
Any further questions? Representative Johnson, hold on, Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. As long as Director Repine is here, I'd like to ask, what's the downside of not creating this?
Co-Chair, Representative Johnson, I would say the practical downside of it is that if there is not an entity such as this one in the state, then we would default the AmeriCorps program to the federal government and somebody would administer it from the East Coast and make decisions on behalf of the state of Oregon.
We're doing a
replacement of AmeriCorps workers.
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair. We would get the volunteers, but they would be directed from the East Coast, if I understood your answer correctly?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Johnson, that's what I have been led to believe, that I've asked that question of, you know, what happens if we're not here doing this, is that the AmeriCorps program probably would still exist in the state, but there would be a lack of presence on somebody who kind of is at the state kind of conducting and delivering where those people will be in their activities, and it would be done through something from the east side of the state.
One more follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair. Are there not AmeriCorps volunteers functioning quite effectively and productively now, absent this commission?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Johnson, those, from my understanding, all AmeriCorps people who are placed in the state of Oregon run through this commission as far as their placement and their resources, the amount of money they receive for their activities.
Mr. Repine, I'm sorry, I don't understand your answer. We're creating this commission with House Bill 2265.
Oh, okay, I understand.
And yet I've actually spoken with, talked to, visited with, on the ground, AmeriCorps volunteers in my community who seem to be producing and delivering exceptionally well.
Right.
Absent this commission. So I'm trying to understand why we need to create yet another commission when the job's getting done on the ground quite effectively right now.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Johnson, I think that's a very good analysis of what's going on, and actually this commission does exist. It does not have statutory standing. It was created as an adjunct budget note back in 89 or 91, kind of lumped on with community colleges, and there it has resided in a very tenable relationship over time, and quite frankly, in our estimation, not getting the support services that they need to become a very effective agent on behalf of the state of Oregon. So they are a commission by title. They do not exist by statute, and the idea is to statutorily seat them so they will have that presence in the state.
One more.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, for your indulgence. It seems to me that absent some demonstration that they're not performing, I may take a lot more convincing to know why we have to create what seems to be a pretty significant bureaucratic framework around something that's already working now. And if it's a matter of status vis-a-vis recognition, I'm not sure I'm willing to create a commission to do that. This seems like a solution looking for a problem.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Johnson, I would say this is a problem looking at a way out of its problem. It is currently housed with the community colleges. Over those periods of time, currently, there have been some very poor communications between the community college and the roles and responsibilities that they believe they are supposed to share with the commission as they are framed today, and what those responsibilities should or should not be. They have gotten, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Johnson, into some financial issues because there has not been good fiscal oversight of this commission. And so the attempt is to put them to an agency who will take those fiscal responsibilities for them and conduct it in a way that they will keep them and the state of Oregon out of trouble.
Any further discussion? Any further questions? Any objections to moving House Bill 2265? Other than the obvious. Okay, we have Representative Johnson, Representative Winters.
Better take a roll call.
We're not quite there yet. Representative Johnson, Representative Winters, Senator Hannon, and Senator Miller. Any other objections? Is that a...
I don't have an objection.
We're taking a vote.
I am objecting, and I'd like
Thank
to explain
you.
Why.
You can do that after the vote.
Okay.
All right, we'll take a roll call.
Aye.
Rowe.
Aye.
Dukes.
I guess so. I don't know if it'll be there on the floor, Mr. Chair.
Fine.
There now.
Miller.
No.
Arioli.
Aye.
Artem.
Aye.
Duncan.
Aye.
Lerner.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Senator Hammond.
No.
Representative Schrader.
No.
Butler.
Aye.
Methodge.
Aye.
No.
Scales.
Aye.
Henson.
Aye.
Morgan.
Aye.
Aiden.
Aye.
Johnson.
No.
An enthusiastic eye. This is a good thing. House Bill 2265, having received the constitutional authority, is moved to the Senate with a due pass recommendation. So ordered. Schrader.
Thank you very much. The program does exist. This is not a big change, and the director, I think, spoke well to that. My objection is I don't think it belongs in the housing department. I mean, that's really my bottom line. And it was, I think, not badly situated. I think the Commission on Children and Families would be another area it could be situated. It just seems inappropriate to be putting it here. I think the director will probably do an excellent job, probably get things up and running if that's the case. But that's I think that's a real issue where this really needs to be.
Now I'm really an enthusiast. House Bill 3173, Representative Hill.
House Bill 3173 extends the sunsets of two income tax credits for the construction and rehabilitation of farm worker housing. One, the farm worker housing construction tax credit, and two, the farm worker housing lenders tax credit. Under current law, authorization for both credits sunsets at the end of this year, December 31st, 2001. In addition to extending the sunset, House Bill 3173 increases the farm worker housing construction tax credit by one, increasing the amount of the credit from 30% under current law to 50% of eligible costs, two, extending the period of claiming the credit from 5 years under current law to 10 years, three, increasing the amount of annually certifiable projects from $3.3 million under current law to $7.5 million, and four, allowing the owner to transfer up to 80% of the certified credit amount to project, quote, contributors. Finally, House Bill 3173 expands the Farm Worker Housing Lenders Tax Credit by allowing nonprofit corporations to sell their income tax credit to another taxpayer. The bill was amended in subcommittee to resolve conflicts with two other bills. The subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 3173A engrossed as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Senator Farioli.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to commend the work of the not only the subcommittee that considered this bill, but also the Migrant Housing Farm Worker Task Force that met through the interim to come with these recommendations. They did great work.
Yep.
It's a lot of work. Yeah. Thank you.
Any further questions? Any further comments? Co-chair Hannity.
Mr. Chair, co-chair and members, I'm going to be voting no on this. I come from a fruit-laden valley, and it really bothers me that they're tearing out the orchards and building golf courses for retirement condominiums, and yet the people who are asking for this tax break are not the small marginal farmers. They're one multinational corporation called Harry and David Berkeley, who asked me to support this bill. Now, if I knew this money was going to farmers and farm workers, I would say I was really supportive of this program. But where it goes to a multinational corporation that is a small contributor to our community and community relations with the people, it's owned by a Japanese corporation, and I just have strong reservations about it. And it's no different than subsidizing a ballpark in baseball in Portland.
Any further comments? Representative Schrader.
I appreciate the good comments from the co-chair, and I have, over the last two sessions, have had that very concern. I have spoken with Farm Bureau and a lot of my local farmers. They actually are in support of this, and I would hope that by the good co-chair's comments be very clear to the department that's administering this program, that it'd be the small farmers that should be in the priority queue on this type of thing, because they're the ones who are getting beat up on a daily basis for trying to do the right thing. So I would hope that as we administer this program, as the co-chair points out, it goes to small guys that really need the help, not the big people.
Any further comments? Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair. I'm so persuaded by your co-chair, I'm going to be a no.
That a blank no or just a...
Just a plain old no.
Plain old no. That's correct. Any further questions? Any further comments? Let the record show Representative Johnson is no.
Yes.
Senator Hannan is no. Seeing no other objections, House Bill 3173 is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. So ordered.
Strike two.
House Bill 3214. Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 3214, as amended, would allow Oregon to implement the provisions of the Federal Breast and Cervical Cancer Prevention and Treatment Act that was signed into law in October of 2000. The law allows states the option of extending full Medicaid health benefits to women who are screened through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention National Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program and found in need treatment for cancer. The Department of Human Services estimates that 70 women will qualify for the program each year and require an average treatment time of about 18 months. The bill includes a general fund appropriation of $323,736. This general fund will be matched with approximately $814,000 worth of federal Medicaid funds. I'd like to thank the good chair of the Human Resources Committee who helped breathe life into this bill when she had libations and her good food that she serves at her house with the House Women's Caucus, who saw this as a very big priority. It's bad to her that she didn't invite me, but I understand the co-chair during the first meeting was able to come. And
in her hand, if you'd like there. To.
Yeah. Did you have your dress on that time?
Oh.
In drag, I understand. The co-chair appeared at the first. And tried to break into their caucus meeting. So I'm glad Jackie kept them out, and I'm glad she breathed life in this bill. Thank you.
Any further comments?
I just have a question. Why is there an age limit on it? It's 64 or younger, and I was just curious as to why.
So we have our resident medical...
After that, they have Medicaid.
Mr. Co-Chair and Senator Dubes,
but after that.
That's right. It has to do with Medicare.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Brown?
I just wanted to say, when I saw the 3-1 match, I figured we couldn't turn this down. So I'm very pleased we were able to find the dollars to fund it. So.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I attended the libation-filled dinner at Representative Winters, and I would like to thank her as well as the co-chairs for finding money to fund this. I can't think of anything more inhumane than a woman receiving a diagnosis of breast or cervical cancer and finding that there was no money to help her. And so thank you very much. I think this is an important bill, and I appreciate you hearing it.
I just need to say that even though there was libation and there was food, this was a very serious issue for us, and that we did take this very, very seriously. I want to thank the co-chairs for agreeing with us that as women, we fully understand that there are some issues that we do not invite the guys to discuss with us.
And for the record, I would just like to say that the individual that happened to be attending this particular libation filled party was not Senator Hammond.
Good, my family appreciates
that. Admitting no guilt or innocence, it was not Senator Hammond. Any further comments? Any objections to moving House Bill 3214 to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 101. Senator Hartung.
Senate Bill 101 establishes the Higher Education Transfer Fund to finance and support technology transfer at the state's public and private universities and community colleges. The bill previously passed out of this committee and has been passed by the Senate. The bill is back in committee because it needs to be amended to resolve conflicts with other technology transfer bills before going on to the House. The proposed amendments will resolve the resulting conflicts. The conflict amendments have no policy impacts. They will simply clarify the legislative intent of the several technological transfer bills being considered this session. Urge a due pass.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? Any comments?
Okay.
Any objections to moving Senate Bill 101 as amended to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 370, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My explanation is relatively brief. This bill recently passed out of the Full Ways and Means Committee, but it was necessary to be returned so that conflict amendments could be adopted. We did that, and your approval is recommended. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Wow. Really? Oh. Questions? Any comments? Any objections to moving Senate Bill 370 to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, it's ordered. Senate Bill 945, Representative Hansen.
Let's see, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got two ponies here. I don't know which one to ride, but I'll start on one and staff can correct me if I need to change horses.
The shorter one.
Yeah, the shorter one. Mr. Chair, we approved the passage of 945 and 946 last week. The two bills are necessary to the ongoing development and implementation of the Oregon Plan. Senate Bill 945 is back before us to resolve conflict amendments between the two bills. Each bill adds Section 3 of ORS 541.365. The B5 amendments to 945 combine the changes of both bills to make Section 3 into one passage of law. The B5 amendments make no change to policy or physical impact of the two bills. Move we adopt the B5 amendments to 945. And we move to pass the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you for that excellent read. I am completely clear now. Any questions? Any concerns? Any discussion? Any objections to moving Senate Bill 945 as amended to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, so ordered.
Yes.
We don't have any other official business to conduct, but we do have a question for Senator Clarno.
What got your attention?
Okay. All right. That's enough.
It's okay. They're teasing you.
It's okay. Any announcements from staff with regard to scheduling?
I don't believe subcommittees have been scheduled yet, but we'll be checking with chairs and with staff. I believe there are two bills yet remaining in the Human Services Subcommittee that will need to be scheduled tomorrow morning. We will be discussing with the co-chairs the schedule for the Capital Construction Lottery and Bonding Subcommittee, and then likely there will be one or more full committee meetings tomorrow as well.
Mike, will there be an education sub tomorrow?
Not an early one.
Okay.
Any other announcements?
Other than you just had before you some questions that were raised on Senate Bill 28, and there's some responses to those for your conclusion.
Okay. Yeah, let's make these part of the record, questions and responses to Senate Bill 288. And again, all the Human Services Subcommittee, great work, guys. Again, to the Human Services Subcommittee, sincere thanks. Good work.
Mr. Co-Chair, if somebody sent you a note from me, I didn't send it, and it is Senator Hannon's turn to watch you today, not mine.
We're adjourned.